This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Federal News Network's open season hotline. Today's question: my spouse wants to enroll under my family plan for 2022. What does he need to do to cancel his own current health plan? Any changes made during open season will take effect the first day of the first full pay period in January. You and your spouse should check the enroll website at OPM for agency-specific information or contact your respective human resources office for instructions on canceling or changing coverage. Check out our open season hotline. Head over to federalnewsnetwork.com and search open season hotline. You can post a question there or call 344-305-1500. That's 844-305-1500. Send us your questions. We'll read the answers daily at 7 past the hour here on the Federal Drive. It's been nearly 2 years since Congress directed the military services to appoint independent cyber advisors. The new offices went through some initial growing pains, but they're starting to find their footing within the DoD's vast bureaucracy now. For more, Federal News Network's Justin Doubleday. And Justin, give us the backstory on these cyber advisors. Why did Congress want them in the first place?
Right. Well, the fiscal year 2020 NDAA actually directed the military services to appoint an individual to serve as the principal advisor to the Secretary of the Service on all cyber matters. And the law requires the position to be independent of other offices like the Chief Information Officer. And it's actually the equivalent of a 3-star general officer. So it's pretty high ranking. And essentially, Congress wanted these positions set up to make sure that the services were paying attention to cybersecurity amid all the other things that they have to each individually worry about, as you know, the Army, Navy, and the Air Force, respectively. And so these independent advisors, each have been in place for about a year for each of the services, but they're just now getting their feet underneath them, as it takes quite a while to get things started within the Defense Department. Chris Cleary, he's principal cyber advisor for the Navy, and he's no stranger to the Navy. He served in the service, and then he was the chief information security officer before he was principal cyber advisor. He spoke at the GovExec Summit this week about the challenges associated with standing up the new position.
There were a few bumps when the organizations were standing up. It was something required by Congress. Nobody likes being told what to do necessarily. It was a new position. There were some challenges associated with getting the offices stood up. And each of the services responded a little bit different in the way that they adopted or embraced the principal cyber advisors within their services. And I think for the most part, we're beyond that. And now we're really getting into the functions of what it is we're supposed to be doing.
And that's Chris Cleary, the Navy's cyber advisor. What exactly, Justin, are their responsibilities now?
Well, they actually have pretty broad authorities to oversee policies and programs that affect cyberspace within each of the services. So that means they're looking at training and recruiting, acquisition of offensive and defensive cyber capabilities, the security of the services industrial base, the contractors that provide the services with different things, the cybersecurity of both IT systems and weapon systems. So it's a pretty broad portfolio there. The principal cyber advisors also have this interesting authority to actually certify the cyber budgets of each of the services. So around the time when the services are submitting their budgets up the chain at the Pentagon, these cyber advisors will actually look at the relevant cybersecurity portions of those budgets and certify as to whether they're adequate or not. And that doesn't mean that they can necessarily change them, but they'll tell their service secretary whether they think it's right or wrong. So Terry Mitchell, he's the Army's principal cyber advisor. He spoke at an event hosted by FCW earlier this fall a little bit about what that budget authority really means.
I wouldn't say they're really budget authorities as much as accountability to make sure that the money that we put into cyber is pushing us to the right. When I met with the staffers, and you kind of wonder why they created the PCA, it's really an ability to kind of push the services to look toward the future and say, okay, can I basically show the metrics of if I give you a dollar, do you get a dollar's worth of cyber?
And that's Terry Mitchell, the principal cyber advisor for the Army. We're speaking with Federal News Network's Justin Doubleday. Now, these cyber advisors, Justin, also have a role in recruiting and training also?
That's right. You know, the way the military is set up, cyber forces, along with all other forces, are recruited and trained by the services and then handed over to the combatant commands for actual operations. And so in the case of cyber, the cyber mission force is recruited and trained through each of the services and then handed over to U.S. Cyber Command. And that force is expected to grow here in the coming years. It's currently comprised of about 133 teams and 6,200 personnel. The Pentagon is asking for more money next year to grow it by four teams. And the Pentagon is also reviewing its cyber strategy next year, and that could result in requirements for even more cyber forces down the road. Principal cyber advisors will kind of be key agents in ensuring the services are recruiting and retaining the right kind of cyber forces, putting the right amount of effort into doing that, and getting their recruiting and training requirements right on the cyber side of things.
And what can we expect next?
Well, as the services are putting together their budgets for fiscal year 2022, they're kind of in the end game of that now. And the Pentagon is kind of in the end game in terms of putting together their budgets for fiscal year 2023. You'll see them have a real crack at actually reviewing and certifying the cybersecurity elements of those budgets here for the first time. They'll have to report to both the service secretary and the Congress on the results of that review. And you'll see them try to ensure that each of the services, you know, despite their big differences culturally and mission-wise, will be reading from the same sheet when it comes to cyberspace. Here's Chris Cleary again.
Trying to make sure our functions stay aligned with each other. So, you know, whatever the Air Force decides to go do down the road doesn't look completely different from the duties and responsibilities of the Navy or the Army. So there is consistency of message. There is consistency of responsibilities. Because when you think cyber, a lot of it is common to all the services, like electricity almost, right? You know, it's common to everybody, particularly when you talk about enterprise IT systems. There's not a lot of difference between the Navy deploying one and the Air Force, the Army deploying another.
That's Chris Cleary, Principal Cyber Advisor for the Navy.
And as far as we know, they don't have CMMC responsibility yet, though, do they?
Well, they would have some input into that process as part of their responsibilities to oversee the security of the industrial base and the security of the cybersecurity of contractors that make up each of their services industrial base. They're not necessarily within the acquisition lane of things in terms of the Pentagon's acquisition directorate, but they would conceivably have some input there on how the best way forward for that issue.
All right. Be careful what you wish for. Federal News Network's Justin Doubleday. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
Check out his story at federalnewsnetwork.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Lessons in Leadership podcast. I am your host, Shane Canfield, CEO of WEPA. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Vice Admiral Cutler Dawson. Cutler has had an incredible career serving our country for 35 years in the Navy, where he attained the rank of Vice Admiral. And during his service, he had numerous assignments afloat and ashore, including Commander, Second Fleet, Striking Fleet Atlantic, and in Washington at the Pentagon and on Capitol Hill, where he was the Navy's Chief of Legislative Affairs. Immediately following his retirement from active duty in 2004, he became the president and CEO of Navy Federal Credit Union, the world's largest credit union, where he served for 14 years. Under his leadership, Navy Federal grew from 2 million to 8 million members. Phenomenal. Cutler, welcome and thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Shane.
You've had a fascinating career across both military and the private sector. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background and your professional journey?
Well, I started out at the Naval Academy, where I graduated in 1970, and then, as you mentioned, spent 35 years in the Navy with six actual afloat commands. The first one was when I was 27 years old. I didn't know enough to be scared of anything, and it was probably one of the highlights of my career. And then after I retired after 35 years, I went to work at Navy Federal Credit Union as the CEO, where I spent my next 14 years. I'm currently retired and enjoying life, and it's been a great run for me.
How would you describe your leadership style, and how's that developed over the years?
My style has been quite consistent. I believe, and I've learned this in the Navy, that you have to go to the deck plates to see what is going on. And you have to learn what your people do and how they do it so you can help them to be better at it and more efficient and more productive. It's something that you need to do all the time. I remember I used to tell folks that you don't want to retreat to your cabin. And what I mean by that is the longer you're in a position, the less you think you have to get out and about. But that should be the opposite. You should get out and about more, because people change, situations change, And you've got to figure out a way to get to them and find out what they're doing and what you can do to help them.
We'll talk a little bit more about your book, but I read it, From Sea to the C-Suite. Fantastic read. You talk about the deck plates in that as well. I would encourage everyone to get a copy of this and read some more detail about going to the deck plates. Cutler, who was the most impactful leader in your life and what quality did you admire about them?
I had numerous while I was in the Navy, but the quality that I enjoyed the most was the leaders that got to know me as an individual. And that they cared about me, and I could tell that they cared about me. And they were not only my leaders, but they were my mentors. And I remember one particular one, Bill Schiffer, when I had my first assignment at the Pentagon. I would go in to see him with my problem of the day, and I knew that he had numerous problems of his own, but he would stop and he would focus on me, and he would make me feel like I was the most important person in his world. And I tried to do that throughout my career, but really it's about caring for your people.
Cutler, in reading your book, there was a quote you used that you used to inspire those people that work for you. And it really got my attention. And it was, you are the captain of your own ship. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what that means and how it was useful to you and the leaders you were developing.
Absolutely. What I mean by captain of your own ship, when you are the captain of a ship, sometimes you're in the middle of the ocean and you don't have anybody to turn to make decisions. You don't have anybody to turn to ask, what should I do now? You have to be the captain of that ship. And I translated that into, let's say, Navy Federal's organization, where I would tell branch managers that I said, you are the captain of the ships of Navy Federal. You're the ones that are facing the members or customers, as others call them, every day. And you have to make decisions without a lot of guidance in some cases and without a lot of time. So be the captain of your own ship. Step up, make decisions, do what you think is right, and you never can go wrong.
I think that is so important. And you have to give your people a little bit of latitude to take some risk as well, because there is risk for them in doing that and risk to your organization.
That's right. And I mentioned that I took command of my first ship with 5 years in the Navy, and I was 27 years old. Well, my boss had 32 years in the Navy, and his guidance to me when I first met him was, Cutler, you do the right thing and I'll back you up all the way. What a wonderful way to spend an assignment with backup and guidance like that.
What great advice. It's clear leadership is a topic you're passionate about. You wrote the book we mentioned before, From Sea to C-Suite. Can you tell us a little bit about that project?
Yes. When I was at Navy Federal, I would tell sea stories. As parables to get my point across. And folks would tell me, Cutler, we like your stories. It gives us a picture of what you're trying to tell us. Now, what else are they going to say? They work for me, but I took it as a compliment, and it was. And my wife encouraged me to write a book, and I needed a co-author to help me. And I found a lady named Taylor Keelan, who was the perfect co-author. She turned in my stories into wonderful chapters that I'm very proud of.
Where can listeners find a copy?
Well, you can get it on Amazon, and you can also get it on the Naval Institute website. And I might add that any proceeds from the book, Navy Federal uses to give to charity.
Fantastic. Cutler, thank you very much. Really enjoyed your time and your lessons and in leadership and sharing with us your life story. And I've learned a lot both from talking to you today and reading your book. And thank you very much for your time.
It's my pleasure. And I would like to add one thing if I could, Shane. During my assignments in Washington, D.C., I gained the utmost respect for the civilians that work here every day. They're hardworking, they're dedicated, and they have my eternal gratitude. I got to come and go from the Pentagon. They stayed every day and worked in Washington when I got to go out enjoy being at sea.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah, WEPA serves civilian federal employees, but your comment is well taken because the interaction between the two is continuous, it's nonstop, and it's critical. So the career civil servants, as well as career military, our country would not be where it is today without them.
I totally agree. And I can tell you from the U.S. Navy standpoint, we couldn't operate like we do without them being the backbone of what we do.
Thank you very much for your time today, Cutler. And to everyone listening to Lessons in Leadership podcast, we'll see you next time.